We have Constance Cumby. Constance, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's great to have you on here tonight, Constance, and you seem like such a sweet person by that picture we have of you up on our website. And I've already got some sort of disgruntled hate mail. I guess you've rustled a few feathers out there in your day, have you?
I probably have.
Now, what is it that you would talk about that would rile some other folks about it? You often talk about the new age. Is that enough to is what you say aggravate a certain segment of the population?
Well, it seems like they love me or they hate me.
Well,
not much in between.
Really? I'll tell you what, Constance, welcome to the show. You're on the Edge Radio broadcast, and we have 9 affiliates out there. And, of course, we broadcast live through PlayStream, and then we have podcast this tomorrow. So there's going to be a lot of people listening to the show. But as you come on the show, Constance, just give us a little bit of your background, and then we'll just go, as we always do, right into the interview.
Okay, a little bit. I was born and raised in Indiana, where you originate from. I grew up in Fort Wayne. And had been in Michigan most of my adult life, with a couple of years in Ohio in between. And I was active in politics starting in probably 1968, when I campaigned for Eugene McCarthy for president. Like many in my generation, I was unhappy about the Vietnam War, justifiably so. Went to work for the Michigan House of Representatives in a few years later, and then eventually went on to law school, and I've been an attorney in Michigan for many years, and an author since 1982, a published author since 1982, and my topic was the New Age movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not seeing New Age movement coming out of Vietnam, being against the Vietnam War, I guess you...
No, it was... in fact, I stumbled onto the New Age movement quite accidentally, and I was
I'll tell you what, just go ahead.
A mystery find by me, and I was looking for exploring a good book I could read about it that would explain some of the obvious things I thought I was encountering, and there were no books out there on the subject that were looking at it from what I thought I was seeing, and I ended up writing the first major book on the topic. A book stayed in print from The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, The New Age Movement and Our Coming Age of Barbarism. And that was released in I wrote most of it in 1981, but it was released in 1983. And then I wrote a sequel in 1986 called A Planned Deception, The Staging of a New Age Messiah. And that was inspired by Peter. The title was inspired by Peter L. Masurier's book, The Armageddon Script. And for 7 years, I was on the road pretty much full time lecturing and writing on the New Age movement, and went back to practicing law actively in 1989 until the present time. But starting in 1995, a new phase of my research began, and that was on the European Union, where my research is still focused.
Well, you mentioned the second sort of title of your book, The Coming Age of Barbarism. I think many would agree that we may be in barbarism right now.
Sure looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of barbarism.
Sure looks like it.
That the whole New Orleans scene looked like some sort of major barbarism there.
Indeed it did. New Orleans looked like it. Iraq looks like it. There are a whole lot of things that look like it.
Why is it that of course the United States, and I guess other places around the world, these hot spots of, well, I guess we could term it as barbarism, are people behind the scenes causing this to bring us to a point? Is that the whole point of that?
It's hard to say how much of it is opportunistic, how much of it is a scramble for world resources, and how much of it might be folks that think they're in a position for a power play. There's probably some elements, as there always have been through history, of both, but pressures seem to be a little bit more intense, and there seems to be more of a scramble.
Well, I tell you what, then, if there's a scramble, if there is, I'm sure there is some people who are capitalizing on the sort of breakdown of civilization, the unraveling of morals, even, I guess you could say. But that does mean that there is a group somewhere. In your book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, do you start to extrapolate about who these people may be?
Well, I had stumbled onto the book accidentally. I had stumbled onto the material accidentally, and there was a lot of material and many things that were sent to me and many theses that people had developed over the years that I had to reject. And just basically I did original research. And what I was, what I had written about in The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow was what Marilyn Ferguson had written about from a positive standpoint. And she said that there were a group of conspirators out there that had stumbled onto their, quote, discoveries, unquote, and used code words and signals, and that they basically, they had a new way of seeing the world, and then that they had linked with others who likewise had the same methods of seeing the world, and that they were linked, whatever their station, they were linked, whether it was at the White House or a taxi driver. And she said it was a benign conspiracy where people were seeking power just to disperse it to others. And I'd been around political circles long enough to know that that didn't happen too often. And I started suspecting that for some of them, it wasn't all as altruistic as she had portrayed it. And that's when I started looking and investigating the New Age movement. And one of my bottom conclusions was it was probably divided into two segments, what I call the hypnotized and the hypnotizers, but the hypnotized probably being 90%. And the hypnotizers were the ones that drove the Rolls Royces and had groupies following them and large followings. And the hypnotized were throwing their resources into the game to basically get where the hypnotizers claimed they were.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned code words and signals. These code words and signals that you've been able to pick up, are these in plain view, or have you discovered
something? They were pretty much in plain view when I started researching, and mm-hmm. what's been astounding to me was how current my book has remained over the years. I was kind of hoping I was seeing things a little bit worse than they were, but actually I probably understated the case, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
When I started looking at it, I noticed that everything seemed to be good for you except for Orthodox Christianity, Orthodox Judaism, and even Orthodox Muslims. And those were characterized in New Age circles as people of the book. Mm-hmm. And if you you couldn't take good care of the earth, you couldn't take good care of your home unless you believed you were part of the earth, unless you were interconnected, things were done holistically. We lived on a spaceship earth and a global village on a very crowded planet. And we had to undergo this mysterious planetary mm-hmm. transformation if we were going to be good earth, good little earth keepers. And I started following some of the threads, and some of it appeared benign. And then I ran into some more frightening aspects, and that was the literature from the deep ecology movement and mm-hmm. Friends of the Earth and beyond.
Wow.
And Daniel Browder had said, or David Browder, who had formed the head of the Sierra Club for years and then went on to other deeper ecology pursuits, said he had formed the Sierra Club, or he had formed Friends of the Earth to make the Sierra Club look reasonable. And then he had formed Earth Stewards to make Friends of the Earth look reasonable. And then somebody came along with another group, I think he called Jonah and Sea Shepherds, and they made the last group look reasonable. And then Dave Foreman came along with his Earth First and made all the others look reasonable. And he said now he was hoping that somebody would come along and make Dave Foreman and Earth First look reasonable. And Friends of the Earth, in the literature, the early literature that I collected, were calling for 2/3 global population reduction. Now you're talking about getting rid of living, breathing, life-loving people. And that reminded me of some literature from the World War II era called Lebensraum, Living Space. And I started examining the core literature and ran into some very frightening concepts, particularly in the Alice Bailey book, and the concept that there was only so much energy to go around. Energy was neither created nor destroyed. It remained constant, but the more people that were consuming it, the less there was to share. And if this Superman was going to come, who was going to help to create planetary solutions, then there, frankly, had to be fewer of us to go around, and the planetary transformation was going to come by a combination of both population reduction and these new mental processes, and that they were a new species. They had evolved past the rest of us. That was what Leland Stewart and his Indian Diversity Council, a very large network of, he had approximately 200 new age organizations officially on board and was networked with many more. And then I started sitting in on conferences and speeches and reading books such as H.G. Wells' The Open Conspiracy, Blueprints for a World Revolution. And he basically said the new things wouldn't become about bloodlessly. He said that the day will come when people will discover what all these interlocking organizations have really been about. But when that day comes, it will be too late to stop you. And then when I discovered, to my utter surprise, when I got into it to a certain depth, I pursued the looked at the writings of David Stanger and his reflections on the Christ, and when he said that there was a part of one of the required entry points in the so-called New Age would be a Luciferic initiation. Hey, you know, I hail from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Lucifer was known to folks around there commonly as Satan. And I started thinking, are these Satanists with Tea Party manners? And then when I explored the history, the founding of the Theosophical Society, the magazine Lucifer, Madame Blavatsky's proclamation in 1892 that what they were really all about was not the study of comparative religions, but instead to prepare the world to introduce the new Messiah that would be Maitreya the Christ, who would be the avatar for the age of Aquarius. In 1910, English clergyman Ledbetter identifying Jiddu Krishnamurti for the role. And then 1929, Krishnamurti decides he doesn't want the job. And then Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, who ironically was the guru for the of the mother of the person I've been currently focusing research on, wrote that in his book, I Am the Gate, he said that when Krishnamurti failed to take this position, then the masters had to cast about for somebody new. The new candidate was Hitler, and the reason Hitler was reined in was he got to thinking he was bigger than the Ashoka Nine. And so on and so forth. When I read that stuff, and I was just kind of dumbfounded, and Hitler had indeed put forth notions of a cleansing action, of a master race, of Aryan supremacy, so on and so forth. And I realized at that point he had not taken those notions from a vacuum. I found several excellent books by scholars, Jean-Michel Angerbert, The Occult and the Third Reich. And these were occult notions. And whether they were real or whether people were believing on them or psychologically acting on them or whether this was something that was really happening, there were some very dangerous results and some very dangerous consequences if people acted on that belief system.
Okay. You know,
and the New Agers have every right to believe what they want. I'll defend to the death their right to believe it, their right to say it, their right to proclaim it. But we have every right to tell the other side of the news as well, and that's basically what I've done. I figured if they had enough nerve to say, let's get rid of two-thirds of population Earth, and Dave Foreman said, let's get rid of everybody but 75,000 and start over, and human beings have no more right to be here than rocks and trees and snail darters.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured if they had the nerve to say it, I had the nerve to quote them.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, okay, that's what I did. And bearing in mind, I've tried to do it with a kind spirit, because that many people are involved at what they call multiple levels of meaning, involved in this quite innocently. It is so pervasive in our culture, and so many aspects have been out there, everything from the age of Aquarius to various ecological concepts. It's almost impossible for anybody in our society to have escaped its influence in one way or another. And so I titled my book The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, meaning it wasn't that obvious. And it wasn't that I was trying to stomp on everybody, but I was trying to say, hey, there are some hidden dangers on this, and you're nice people. I'm sure if you knew the whole picture, you wouldn't want to go there. Let's take a good look at this. Maybe it's not one step in heaven and the other on earth. Maybe it's one foot on earth and the other foot on hell.
Mm-hmm.
And earth worship, that goes against the grain. Christianity, as I was taught, you were to fear God and give glory to Him. And this whole notion that we're gods ourselves, it might explain a lot, but it might explain why we're in such a mess, but it doesn't explain anything else.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's where I am.
Whoa, well, that's quite an enunciation there of where you're coming from there. And we're going to crank it down as we get into the questioning part of the show. When you were talking about the holistic approach of the Earth and it being a spaceship and that we need to clean it up and stop the fighting and whatnot, you almost sound like you were listening to previous broadcasts of the Edge Radio broadcast, because we've had a number of guests come on and say that very thing. But I tell you what, Constance, I do appreciate your rather gentle approach. As you said, you sort of you have a right to respectfully answer. Yes, answer, but respectfully so. And I think if all sides would do that, this Earth would be a better place. Perhaps those that are trying to move us in a certain direction would appreciate that too as well. You said there are two types of people, those that are being hypnotized and the hypnotizers. Now, would we expect the hypnotizers be people such as Masons or government officials or other religions?
Well, when I say the hypnotizers, I usually would refer in one of the large segments of the New Age were the cult leaders, who very often got enormously wealthy at the hands of their rather impoverished followers. And I would be referring to people such as Reverend Moon, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, who had his 97 Rolls Royces and his vast estates at Pune in India. Various Werner Erhard, who had the large following with his Erhard Seminars training, and he later changed the name to the Forum, and then Landmark Communications. Folks that are actually getting wealthy off of the business.
Okay.
You have a large segment of people in there who are altruistic or seeking solutions to everyday psychological difficulties and problems that all of us experience.
Would you consider American televangelists in that same category, Constance?
Well, there's one in particular that I had my battles with, well-documented public battles with over the years, and that was Pat Robertson. So, who incidentally many people may perceive of him as anti-New Age, but I will tell you right now, I got the word out on the New Age movement. Absolutely no thanks to him. He fought me tooth and nail. I'm the only person I know who was attacked publicly several times on the 700 Club. And then I had friends, and he got enormously, enormously wealthy off the process. And then the other one, who spent some time in the penitentiary, Jim Baker, I was invited as a guest on that program back in 1983, September 23rd of 1983, to be precise. And before going on the program, I was warned by producers not to mention Alvin Toffler and not to mention John Nesbitt and Megatrends, both of which were significant portions of the New Age movement. And there was a woman who came out and just stared at me very, very coldly for a very long period of time, and somebody else showed up unexpectedly to go on the program. I hadn't even told my mother I was invited because I was fearful there would be interference from Pat Robertson's segment, and indeed they did try to interfere. The producer, Jackie Mitchum, called the producer of the PTL Club and accused her of inviting me on just to boost their ratings, and she said, no, that's not why we were invited her, but assuming it was so what? Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't invite her. Mm-hmm. And the day I showed up to do the program, a couple people showed, even though there had been no communication between them for years at the breakfast for guests, grilled me mercilessly. And then waiting to go on the program, woman came out and just stared at me mercilessly. And, of course, you have to know me. That doesn't frighten me. Those kinds of stares just kind of inspire me. And finally, the producer came out to get me to take me on the set, and she said, Constance, I'd like to introduce you to Vyas Vital, the director of our Total Learning Center. And she said, Vi, she said, I think we should have Constance on the program. We need some guidelines as to what is New Age and what isn't. She said, I nearly invited Norman Cousins on the program, and I would have done so out of ignorance. And Vi looked at me very coldly and then said, people wouldn't listen unless it came out of Jim Baker's own mouth. And then she said, besides, I've read the Aquarian Conspiracy. And when she said that, I looked at her and I said, oh? And she said, well, I didn't read it all the way through. And I said, well, why not? She said, because I found it so oppressive. And I said, I see. Very interesting. Well, when the scandal came down on PTL Club, it turns out, according to the books by Baker's Bodyguard and the Charlotte reporters who wrote books about what had transpired, that Baez Beetle was the person who was insisting to Jim Baker that God was expecting him to spend that kind of money and taking him on the buying sprees. And she at the Total Learning Center was the one with the New Age courses and teaching hypnosis and pushing every facet of the New Age that she could. Now, she was working the Christian community, and there's human nature comes into all of it, and greed can affect any of us. But, we're all mortals, we're all subject to temptation. Have been aspects of it. When I discovered the New Age movement, I thought the lines would be very simple. I thought it would be Christians versus lions, so on and so forth. And it wasn't that simple. My support came from about everywhere. My opposition came from about everywhere. I had support from just about every denomination out there, and I had opposition from just about every denomination out there. Jeremy Rifkin, prominent New Ager, had told the Christians to rewrite their theology, and they were dutifully going along with it. And basically, I came along, and I upset a lot of little apple carts in many circles, and I wasn't too popular in those circles for having done so.
Mm-hmm. Well, because of that, it's why you're on the Edge Radio broadcast, the more unpopular people that there are. We like to have them on the show. But, hey, by the way, just as an aside, did your dog happen to get to look inside the air-conditioning doghouse at Jim Baker's place?
No, I never saw the, I saw his secretary. In fact, I didn't see Baker's office. His secretary's office was enormously luxurious. And I was taken on a tour of that, of the PTL Club that particular day. And then I flew to Kansas City where I was speaking as a speaker for the Full Gospel Businessmen's Association, and met an extremely interesting character that day, too, who probably you could call one of the hypnotizers, a fellow by the name of Benny Hinn.
Whoa.
So the whole
televangelist question came up when you meant you used a code word on me. You said Rolls Royce, and I immediately thought, televangelist.
Well, Raghu and Sri Rajneesh, remember, had 97 of them.
Yeah.
And he was in Madras in Oregon, in Antelope, Oregon, where he had the compound. And when church was held in Madras, he used to love to disrupt it. His vow of silence didn't extend to the horns on his Rolls Royce.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have all 97 Rolls Royces follow in, and then huge hordes of the followers in the red. And as church was letting out on Sunday morning, they'd go down the street shining, Bhagwan, Bhagwan, mm-hmm. Bhagwan. Mm-hmm. And they had built crematorium with bleacher seats. And it was a very interesting spectacle. They had purchased more weapons than the entire state of Oregon combined.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Yoga Instructor's Journal, a New Age publication, became very alarmed about that, and justifiably so, and they had built crematoriums with bleacher seats, claimed to say goodbye to their dear loved ones. And then the other really bad New Age cult, I call it, that I blocked horns with was the Church Universal and Triumphant Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting experience, ultimately. I spent some time in their former headquarters in Colorado Springs, which were purchased by a family who had frankly bought them to get the cult to go elsewhere, and they went to Malibu after that was bought. And when they bought the mansion, they discovered some very interesting things. They discovered the house was wired from top to bottom with a hidden microphone system. And they left it in and showed it to people when they came, disabled it, of course. And one night I was in Colorado Springs. Colorado is an interesting state. You never know if it's going to be 70 above or 70 below. And the altitude, you start at 5,280 feet in the Denver area, and things go from bad to worse. And so I was taken to Colorado Springs with this house to rest up for a week, and the first night in there, I went up to the room, and it was an unseasonably warm November night, and I thought, oh, I've really lost it. I was trying to close the Venetian blinds so I wouldn't put on a strip shell for the residents of the Broadmoor Hotel, which was a block away. and I just could not budge those blinds. And finally, I got up on a chair to look to see what was going on, and I didn't have the blind handle in my hand. I had another hidden microphone. And that Sunday night, I did a radio program with a WDAL in Baltimore, and it was from the very room where Mark L. Prophet had died. And somebody called in to say that they were not part of the New Age movement. Well, they moved to Montana, and eventually it was discovered that they had a weapons cache very, very similar to the one that Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh had in Oregon. And I think that's when that one started unraveled. And Mark Prophet has been dead for years, and I think Elizabeth Clare Prophet is either dead or suffering from Alzheimer's, one or the other, last I heard.
Okay, Constance, when you refer to the other side, I suppose, as the New Age, would that consequently mean you're part of the Old Age?
Well, nobody likes to be known as the leader of the Old Age movement, but that was, it's interesting because Peter Lemasurier's book, The Armageddon Script, which was inspired my second book, it was an astounding book. He had talked about some very detailed plans to stage a phony second coming of Christ from the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem with sufficient detail to make the average Christian, Jew and Muslim think that was the real thing, that it would be the Imam Mahdi to the Muslims. And then he said they would not have to worry, that everybody would try to game this, and they wouldn't have to worry about the Old Age. The masked forces of the Old Age would go on to defeat each other in a massive mutual venting of long pent-up aggression. And that was one of the other disturbing themes I found in New Age literature, that they had this belief, that these set of apocalyptic beliefs of their own, that they would have a struggle in the here and now with the non-believers in New Age philosophies. Barbara Marx Hubbard's book, Revelation, The Birth of a New Age, talked about humanity being divided into four segments, and that one fourth would have to immediately die in the second half for kind of useless eaters, that they maybe would be good for something. They just basically were not spiritually motivated one way or the other. And her book said, we come to bring death. We do this for the sake of the planet. The riders of the pale horse are about to pass among you. They will separate the sheep from the goat. This is the most painful hour in Earth's history. And then said that those, the New Agers, that were listening and hearing their internal voices would be the guides who would lead the others through this. Now, that's some pretty frightening thought, especially when you think that you're going to wait on it, and when you think, consider Rwanda and what happened in Rwanda when you probably saw the film, and it said that there would be a signal given. And Marilyn Ferguson wrote about this also in the Aquarian Conspiracy, that they would unite. She quoted Nicholas Kazantzakis and said that they would unite upon a signal. Saviors of the Earth, it was the book she quoted from. And the Rwanda, there was such a signal given, and there was a massive killing that broke out. Well, I've just read too many of those books talking about it, talked to too many folks who really believed this was going to happen and that this would be something positive. And the very lady who confirmed my belief when I started investigating it and researching it for real was somebody I had known from political circles for many years. And a very pleasant person to get along with, as a matter of fact. And I invited her to dinner when I was doing my research, when I heard her drop some of what I was beginning to believe were the buzzwords at a political function one night back in 1981. And she kind of confirmed my worst fears about this, as to where it was going, what the belief systems were, and where it was headed. And basically, they believed that there was a clear delineation, that there was going to be a death struggle with peoples of the book. And so I've always tried to remember that strategy, that they were going to, basically, they were going to, the mass forces of the Old Age would be pitted against each other, Jews against Christians, Christians against Muslims, that the less orthodox among those circles would probably link up and change sides with whatever happened. But then there were other facets too that horrified me in the book. The Alice Bailey books, for example, and many of the Alien, the Space Brothers books, said that Orientals were welcome to join them, Jews were welcome to join them, Africans were invited to join them, American Indians were invited to join them, but those races should be practicing celibacy as their races were destined for distinction. And I told folks, I said, hey, it's a great movement for you, I guess, if you're a blonde, blue-eyed pagan. If you're anything else, you might be in a whole bunch of trouble. And this belief that you're ascending onwards and upwards, and that a master race is coming, and that a new species is coming, and if they link up with it and in a certain way mentally, and prepare themselves mentally and perhaps physically, that they can become part of this new elite era, and that there's room for them. They're going to be the super race, but some of the rest of us are going to be out.
Mm-hmm.
It's disturbed thinking, and somebody has to point it out that there's some potential trouble there. And it seems the way that people get there
is by
altered state practices.
Mm-hmm. Constance, let me break in here. You said something about the Rwanda massacre over there as a...
Yes, there was a tree. When word was given of trees, and there would be a signal given, they would talk about the trees.
Okay.
And the speech was given, the talk was about the trees, and the slaughter began.
Okay.
And it was mass slaughter. It was kind of, I think, that in Jonestown. Jim Jones was deeply into the New Age.
I want to pick up...
Previews of where this could be going.
All right, I want to pick up on that signal thing, because we've had a guest on a couple times by the name of Rush Dizdar, and he claims that there are these people, or what he called sleeper cells, that are waiting for a signal from some sort of master race of people or operators or handlers, and at some certain time a signal is going to be given in this country. And he said there's millions of these people that are waiting to either cause this anarchy or to take control when anarchy does happen. So it's interesting that you mentioned that signals were given.
Well, that was interesting, because David Spangler, in his early books that I were not Reflections on the Christ but a companion book, had mentioned that something like that would be something that New Agers would act upon. Barbara Marx Hubbard also indicated that there would be a signal and they would act upon, and that they wouldn't have to worry, even though they may be God's instruments to do this cleansing of the earth. It wasn't really their responsibility, that they were to be the guides for everybody else. They had been chosen. They were the elect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think a true Christian, and there's cults in Christianity too, but a true Christian believes that God's going to do it. And I was looking at a Muslim book, too, and they were saying that they believed that God was going to do it, that they weren't supposed to be doing this themselves. And there was a Christian sect that was bordering on New Age. In fact, I found out there were New Age ties. But the leader was running around saying, he said, you know, if God tells you to kill somebody, it isn't murder. And I told my audience, I said, yeah, and if God told you to kill somebody, chances are it wasn't God.
Whoa. That's Johnny on the spot. Well, let me ask you, Constance, have you ever sat across a table from a self-avowed New Ager?
Oh, many times.
And do you guys strike up a conversation? How do those conversations end? Do you go a little their way and they go a little your way? Or you guys end up in fighting terms?
We've usually gone our own ways, but many times the New Agers have come my way. The publisher of Donald Key's book, Earth at Omega, Passage to Planetization, which was put out in 1982, and incidentally said that the New Age movement so far has not become a target, but if it did become a target of alarm forces and defenders of the status quo ante, it'd make a very difficult target, impossible to, because it would appear to represent American values. And the publisher of that wrote me a very long letter and said he had read my book and he had decided he was going to change course. And I actually met him. He came to Cornell, New York, when I was doing some interviews in that particular town, and had long talks with him. And he told Donald Keyes and Norman Cousins they would have to find a new publisher. And they did. The new publication was not of the quality that he was. There's been many New Agers who have turned and left the New Age movement as though they've seen the devil. I've known of one or two that came back and then had some very bad experiences, unfortunately, with Christians who weren't the kindest and fled there.
Wait a minute, you mean there's Christians out there that are not nice people?
Pardon?
Are you saying there's Christians out there that are not nice people?
Now, there's some Christians that really aren't Christians. It's a bad, like I said, we're all human, and there's folks out there who have bad spirits of self-righteousness.
Hmm. Here's a question for you, Constance. The go signal that you mentioned earlier, does it have anything to do with W.B. Yeats' poem, The Second Coming?
You're talking about slouching towards Bethlehem. What strange... I know the poem to which you refer. I don't know, but that is a very strange poem. By the way, Yeats was a theosophist himself and was a roommate of Ezra Pound for a number of years. Pound was, of course, involved himself with both the fascists and the Nazis, and that's a very interesting segment of the New Age movement that permeated the far right in this country as well as the far left.
Hmm.
That I couldn't say for sure. What strange is, beast is this? Its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem, waiting to be born, or something to that effect.
Yeah, that's the end of it. That's the end of that poem. I guess I've got it right here, so I guess I'll have to take a look at it after the show. Constance, we're dealing with the New Age. I would think that some New Age people are simply wanting some honesty on your side, and you've already given some, even by us having a conversation of televangelists capitalizing on certain events. But there's also, I would think, a certain amount of Christians in general, even churches, that do nothing more than mislead people to try to keep them in their little cliques and their groups. And the other side, it's quite obvious that that's going on. But in most Christian circles, it's this sort of protectionist racket that anybody can get away with anything because there are no rules. There's no one in control, particularly in the Protestant group, whereas in the Catholic group, you have the Pope. You have some kind of structure, but it's freewheeling and open, and there's so many charlatans out there in the Christian side that the other side is just waiting for somebody to be honest about it. Say, look, some percentage of you guys is messed up.
Well, we're all sinners, all come short of the glory of God, and there's been a lot of, I could tell you probably more horror stories than anybody you've been with. I've really been through the mill, but and then on the other hand, I think it really comes down to who loves God and is trying to please Him. I think there's a lot of lip service, and then I think the temptation, one of the quarrels I had with New Age theology was that we're all gods ourselves, and that's a temptation in Christian circles as well, even though they say it's God. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like to think that they're there, and then there's just been so much of this permeated, and the unification church is a whole another angle that... Mm-hmm.
Okay, Constance.
There's been big money temptation, okay, and big power, and the lines are so blurred. And lots of people who should know better have crossed those lines, and then have the thing is co-opted. But I think that when I started looking at this, it pretty much convinced me that there really was good out there, and there really was evil out there, and perhaps there really was a being out there named Lucifer who had been deposed, and who did resent it, and who did indeed fervently want to be worshipped as God. That was one of the strangest things I found in New Age theology, this sympathy for Lucifer. Mm-hmm. And in some segments of some of the claimed Christian circles, the one I quoted said, if God tells you to kill somebody, it isn't murder. That segment, which was posing as Christianity, when I started tracing back roots, I found some very strong New Age theosophical ties. And it's hard to believe that maybe it's really true.
Okay, yeah, I'm thinking what you're saying there. There really may be a devil. Hey, we have a question come in for you. Do you have any knowledge of the so-called secret society of nine men?
You know, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh always talked about the Ashaka Nine, and the fellow who wrote the book on Truett Anderson, I believe, Walter Truett Anderson, on the Esalen, also wrote that Esalen was giving seminars on this group of nine, and I've heard that repeatedly. Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh wrote about the Ashaka Nine, and they were the ones who had picked Krishnamurti, and they were the ones who had picked Hitler, and so on and so forth, but... Yeah. who they are. You know, there may be, I don't know if there's 9 or 9 billion or 9 trillion or 9 trillion, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
I would just say
I have heard that talk. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just say 9 bad guys. How about that?
It might be 9 bad guys. Might be a lot more.
Okay.
9 top guys.
Uh-huh.
Who knows?
Uh-huh. Or it could be number 9. Number 9. Hey, I've got this question for you. In the movie Eyes Wide Shut, Tom Cruise is led by 2 women to the other side of the rainbow, and there are other references to rainbows in the shop names and so on. What was the real meaning of the other side of the rainbow?
You know, I don't know, and we've had a lot of jokes about this in my family because my sister in Fort Wayne is married to the great-grandson of a fellow who wrote The Wizard of Oz, who, it turns out, was deeply involved in the Theosophical Society. Greg's a Christian himself, but we've joked about that and said, what a family we have. Everything from the hidden dangers of the rainbow to somewhere over the rainbow. But I don't know what was meant by that particular symbolism. Mm-hmm. I do know that the use of the rainbow in the New Age movement generally is traced to what they call the Antankarana, the building of the Rainbow Bridge, and which was supposed to be a bridge between the Oversoul and the personality, personalities being us and the Oversoul, as Benjamin Krem explained in one notable radio debate I did with him many years ago. He said Lucifer was the Oversoul. And I said, sorry, but where I came from in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Lucifer was the devil.
Okay, so I'm, yeah, well, from where you're at, but you mean I can't watch Wizard of Oz anymore?
I had noticed that yellow brick road. Mm-hmm. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Yeah.
And it did look like a 666 intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
boy.
I used to wonder about that. And I met Greg, it was a late in life marriage for both my sister and him. Mm-hmm. Both. Marriage for both of them.
Okay, so witch.
I asked him about the Theosophical history, and he yes, and I have several books on it now. But
okay.
They treat it as children's fantasy. It's colorful, interesting story. But I think it is interesting. It's an interesting mm-hmm. illustration of how this has permeated many places where we would not suspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, I think you could use a lot of the illusion, the characters in the show, perhaps the witch was the devil, and mm-hmm. the little monkeys maybe were the demons, and mm-hmm.
and then there was Dorothy, who was the good Christian lady who was shocked at
mm-hmm. oh boy,
at the lady taking little Toto, and
oh boy, I'll tell
so
you what,
so forth.
Well, I'm feeling kind of sad right now. I've got to ruminate on this. Constance, we're going to go to our 9 o'clock break here, so just stay on the line, please.
Yeah.
That I heard of once in a lullaby.
Well, it seems that one group or segment of the society has sort of sequestered the rainbow for their own personal use. Why has that unmentioned group took a charge of that rainbow?
I have no idea why the rainbow was adopted as a symbol in the first place, but it was adopted as a symbol. I knew it was something I had stumbled onto kind of early. I used to notice when I was doing my research back in 1981 that if I saw a store with a big rainbow in it, I could walk in and get all the research materials I wanted. And as I was collecting the materials and horrified at some of the more flamboyant aspects, I walked into a Fort Wayne, Indiana bookstore that was called Rainbows, the Wife, my sister, who is no longer with us, sent me an article from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette and said, I think this might be some of what you were talking about. My Thanksgiving of 1981, I walked in with my mother, who didn't believe any of this was happening. And I had, at that point, there was a speaker who was going around New Age circles. His name was Benjamin Krem. And he was advocating to expect the Christ in the spring of 1982 and giving talks saying the Christ was now here and that since July 19, 1977, the Christ had been among us. And I had witnessed this. He spoke in Detroit to an extremely large audience, and I was shocked at the size of the crowd and the political power of the crowd. I had discovered Krem's book in early summer of 1982, 81, and I was cataloging my books at, believe it or not, Anita Baker, the famous, later famous singer's computer. She was a secretary in our law office in downtown Detroit back in those days. And when I looked at Benjamin Krem's book, I kind of whistled and said, you'd have to see this one for yourself to believe it. And I carried that book around with me night and day, and I was in court in St. Clair Shores, Michigan, and I ate it in the big boy. And when I got back to my office, I discovered the book was gone. Well, it wasn't the kind of book you get on the phone and say, my name is Constance Cumby, I'm a lawyer. I lost my copy of The Reappearance of the Christ by Benjamin Krem, and is it by any chance at the St. Clair Shores District Court, or is it over at the Big Boy? I was kind of hoping the janitor would have just kind of quietly thrown it in the wastebasket and never mentioned it to anybody. But I had to have that book. And that night when I closed my office, I ran down to the Mayflower, which was the New Age bookstore. And at that point, they knew me, and they knew the focus of my research. And John Barnswell, the assistant manager, was standing there, and I ran in and I said, do you have a copy of The Reappearance of the Christ by Benjamin Krem? And he said, no, Constance, sorry, we're all sold out, but he said, here. He said, Unity's bringing him to town, you can hear him in person, and he handed me a flyer. And I stood there and just looked at it, read it with my mouth open, and I thought, well, Unity's very politically powerful in Detroit. Most politicians thought they had to put in mandatory appearances to stay in the good graces of the electorate. I thought, that's no Christ, but if Unity's bringing him to town, something's going on. And so I went to another New Age bookstore, Middle Earth, and picked up a copy of that, and picked up my first copy of The Occult and the Third Reich, and also some of the Alice Bailey books, and started a new phase of in-depth research. Mm-hmm. And November 4th of 1981, he was in Detroit, and there was, I saw a former law partner of mine in the crowd, I saw my accountant in the crowd, I saw the head of the Detroit Council of Churches in the crowd, the entire Holistic Health Medical Association was sitting there, the hall, which seated approximately 1,300, was packed out. And it was Benjamin Krem came in, and he obviously was having a very hypnotic effect on the people that were gathered. And I usually can stare just about anybody down, but I didn't try. I took about four or five friends with me so I wouldn't be alone. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting evening. It was a frightening evening. I was watching mass hypnosis in practice. And I turned behind me and saw somebody I had known from political and social circles for years, and a local independent film producer. And I said, Al, I said, I know what I'm doing here tonight. What are you doing here tonight? He said, because, Connie, he said, I've joined Unity. He said, I'm taking a course in miracles. He said it was a class requirement that we be here. And then he said, you know, I thought a progressive person like you would have joined Unity. And I talked to him and very deeply about it, and he thanked me. And then Benjamin Krem came in, waved hands in a certain way, and most of the audience appeared to flip over into a complete red-eyed trance. It was a very startling thing. Mm-hmm. And he said things that were extremely startling. And at the end of the night, he asked everybody to gather for a recitation of the Great Invocation, and which basically it's a prayer literally for this new Christ to come and take the world. And it said, from the point of light within the light of the mind of men, may light stream forth. And I told the woman next to me, I said, I will not be saying this prayer with you. And she said, that's all right. And I said, I will say my own prayer. And she said, that's fine. We all have our own path to God. And I said, the reason I will not be saying this, I said, the scripture said very clearly that the Antichrist would come denying that Jesus was the Christ. That Benjamin Krem has denied it all night and said that Maitreya is the Christ for the New Age. And she said, well, there's been many Christs. And I said, what any Christian would say, there's been one, and his name is Jesus. And they looked at me from rows around like I was from outer space, and this was on the intermission yet. Benjamin Krem came in, and I thought the hypnosis at the first was maybe a function of the very expensive sodium lighting they had for a video capture of the evening. but he seemed to have exactly the same effect on the crowd with the lights out, and his head almost rotated as close to a 360-degree rotation as I've ever seen on a human being. It was incredible.
You mean like The Exorcist?
And he started out from the point of light within the mind of God. Acoustics were wonderful. I said, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." And I did that every stanza, and finally he got to the last part, "May light and love and power restore thee, plan on earth, and may it seal the door where evil dwells," which I knew from the Alice Bailey books, The Raising, The Initiation, that meant seal the followers of three dead and gone religions, Jews, Christianity, and Muslims, into their own separate place and for their destruction. And I said, nice and loud, I said, "May Jesus Christ return to earth and end the evil present in this room tonight."
Okay,
well, Benjamin Krem promised that crowd he was going to have a transmission directly from Maitreya the Christ as soon as that thing was over. And that was one of the most frightening things of all to me. He waited and he waited and he waited. And if he'd been faking it, he could have said anything. He was really waiting for something to come over him, and it didn't happen. And he finally dismissed the crowd and said, "That will be all. You are dismissed." And they had planned to film that night. That was the biggest crowd they've ever had. And Detroit's the only town he's never come back to. Anyway, we walked out, and Dan Butts, who was director of the Southeastern Michigan Holistic Health Association and was the chairman for the evening, was just furious. And they're walking out, they were glaring at me. And I just said, "Well," I said, "if you're Maitreya the Christ or Betrayer the Christ or whatever his name's supposed to be, or everything he's cracked up to be, one lousy Christian in the room saying the Lord's Prayer shouldn't have stopped him."
I have to admire your boldness on that situation there.
Where it was, the Antahkarana was supposed to be the bridge, the mental processes, the thought processes to help them get there. And that's why I said that was the hidden danger. Most people thought this was going to make the world better and better, a happier place, a better place. Maybe there were some subtle things going on. Maybe this really was a battle for souls. Maybe this really was where lots of ugliness on the earth had come from, and if so, somebody had to say it. And if they had enough nerve to say it, I had enough nerve to quote it.
You know, I don't know why you're doing this to me, Constance. But when you're triggering thoughts in my head, maybe you're subliminally talking to me. But when you said Benjamin Krem waved his hand and that people became hypnotized, all of a sudden I inserted my own reality and I saw Benny Hinn waving his hand.
Benny Hinn is a very interesting character because I don't think that there's that much difference between him and Benjamin Krem, to be very honest. Yeah. They both have a similar message, "You are God."
Uh-huh.
The thing is, Hinn had used techniques of mass hypnosis. And I have to tell you something. I did meet Benny Hinn. It was November, the same day I was on the PTL club, and I flew to Kansas City, and they took me to the airport to pick him up. And my biggest remembrance was he had to stop at a department store. I'd never met him. And he had to go in, and he couldn't stop at a Kmart or a drugstore or an RX or anything else, the Rexall. It had to be a department store because he had to have Aramis cologne. And I've always wondered, when they said the ladies were falling flame in the spirit, was it him or was it the Aramis?
Probably a little bit of both with that character.
Yes. There are techniques, there are people.
There like two peas in a pod right there.
The Bible, which I've is so maligned, but I think it has perfect descriptions of what was happening. And it said, "And with vain words through covetousness will they make merchandise of you." Well, there's been people making merchandise of them among many constituencies. And, our Lord said, he said, "In that day many will say to me, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in thy name, cast out devils in thy name, do work miracles in your name? Depart from me, ye who work iniquity, I never knew you."
All right.
And there's a whole lot of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of mass merchandising and making fools of people and putting people under the spell and gaining people's estates. And then you watch. You want to see somebody who's really doing the Lord's work, watch and see who gets poor from it. Sometimes people give too much respect to the guy driving around in the big Cadillac and the has all the money. Watch and see who's really putting their money where their mouth is, and watch to see who's driving the Rolls Royces and who's driving the Mercedes-Benz and living like a king.
Mm. Constance, we have this question here for you. Would you be surprised if Xavier Solana experiences a massive head wound, and do you view Solana as an empty vessel awaiting the spirit of Satan?
Well, you're referring to Javier Solana, and I've done tremendous research on the man since 1995. I don't know what the exact interpretation of that particular scriptural prophecy is, and whether that, I've always felt that that meant more like a wound to a system that came back, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Javier Solana is a very interesting person, and there's times I've wondered if he wasn't born and raised for this. I don't know. If he's not, he has my deepest and most profound apologies, but he has certainly has appears to fit many, many specifications of what was looked for. His mother's guru was Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and his grandfather was on the list of endorsers of planetary citizens when they were setting up all the Crisis Now Here apparatus back in 1982, but what drew my attention to Javier Solana was the treaty that he negotiated with Israel for the European Union on November 20th, 1982, the conference that he opened with the agenda of battling religious fundamentalism worldwide and gaining and favorable trading terms for the European countries in the basin and getting the United States out of the Mediterranean. He opened that November 27th in 1995, and then 2 days, 3 days later, he was made the new head of NATO, and then which shocked the Spanish press because he had been the leader of the Spanish opposition to NATO and was best known for haranguing crowds saying, "We are radically opposed to Spain's entry into NATO."
Mm-hmm.
And he looks, frankly, like somebody you'd buy a used car from and feel very, very safe doing it. He looks like the safest guy in the whole room, but what comes out of his mouth, the power that's been entrusted to him, and a very interesting person.
Well, Constance, let me...
And,
let me,
again,
Constance,
your guess
Constance, what,
to
for
the Antichrist identity.
Okay, let me break in here.
But I've told people this could be one educated guess.
Okay.
Basically, his job was created with Section 666 of the Europa Code, and then he proposed greatly expanded dictatorial powers over Europe for himself, which he got, and they're there in case of emergency, and he did propose that with Recommendation 666, the Western European Assembly, a 10-nation assembly that he was given control over. And he is antagonistic towards religion. Again, you know, I don't know for sure. None of us really know for sure, but he is a very interesting person, and most Americans appear not to recognize his name. But whether that prophecy means literally he's going to get a literal wound to the head and come back, or whether it means a system that is damaged and recovers, I don't know.
Okay, short answer here, Constance. Why would this writer refer or expect to see a massive head wound to this Solana person?
He's referring to a verse in the Bible, the beast which had a wound by the head and did live, and in the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, I thought basically that system most probably was Nazism and made a recovery, that everybody thought Nazism was dead and it was making a recovery. With large segments of the New Age agenda, very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, very interestingly, Germany, which many people thought was dead after World War II, Germany will be in charge of Europe next year for 2007, which is the exact year that Javier Solana hopes to make many of his very big dreams for Europe and the Mediterranean region. Come through and start the 7-year plan implementing them, which runs 2007 through 2013 with a 3.5-year review period in between. And again, I don't know if this is it. I don't know if, you know, but it's a very interesting thing to watch.
I'll tell you what, Constance, we have to balance the time between the questions and the answers because there's so many of them here. Do you, from the opposition of the New Age, do you see any significance to June 6th, of 2006, or does the New Age cadre see or expect a significance from June 6th?
You know, it's interesting. I haven't thought of that in a couple of years, but a couple of years ago I saw many things that were being put forth and many New Age prophecies that big things might be happening on June 6th of the year 2006. There's a possibility that people may be acting on it. On the other hand, sometimes publicity makes these things go away. Times are in God's hands. Nothing can happen until God is ready. But my thinking is, if God is ready, we'd better be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a question for you. What is the definition of Lucifer?
Well, the New Agers like to say that Lucifer is the light bearer. And that Lucifer, when they say Lucifer, they don't mean Satan. And my retort to that is, who but Lucifer himself would have a vested interest in defending Lucifer's good name? How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, was in Isaiah and in the older versions of the Bible. It's interestingly, in the 20th century, many versions of the Bible were changed to take the word Lucifer out. But the belief is, and Christian tradition has been, that Lucifer was the fallen archangel who basically attempted to usurp the power of God, was tossed from heaven. Jesus said, "I beheld Satan fall as lightning from heaven." And that my belief is, the traditional Christian belief, that Lucifer is Satan, and the Theosophists like to depict him on their magazine as a good angel of light. Benjamin Krem likes to say he's the planetary oversoul towards which we're all returning. But my thinking is that this is just a deception. The scriptures say when Satan appears to you, he will appear as an angel of light.
Okay, well, you said it yourself there, and at least probably you referenced at least five different scriptures here that referred to him as light. But did not in the book of Genesis God say that light was good?
Pardon?
Did not God say in the book of Genesis that light is good?
Well, light is good, but maybe the light at one point was good, but usurping God's position is not good. You know, I'm not smart enough to second guess God, and Lucifer, I'm sure, is far smarter than I was or ever will be, but he wasn't smart enough to second guess God either. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, it was a rebellion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose if you have to have somebody on you know, you got to have somebody.
I'm going to switch phones on you because I think the battery is going on this
okay.
one. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello?
Hello, Constance.
Okay, I'm here.
You switched phones and we're all back on the line again, eh?
Okay.
All right, here's a question for you. Which is the best book by Alice Bailey that explains this occultic plan?
Well, she wrote a whole bunch of them. The Externalization of the Hierarchy, it was the first serious one that I read. The Rays and the Initiations have a lot of this material. And her autobiography, her spiritual autobiography, the unfinished autobiography of Alice Bailey is certainly interesting for a perspective on where she was coming from.
Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, there was a full-page ad in the New York Times that said, "The Christ is now here." The question is, what has taken so long?
I think they honestly thought they were going to pull it off in 1982. They honestly thought they were going to pull the whole thing off. It's not going to happen. God never lets things like that happen until people are warned. If it is a contest between good and evil, the times are in God's hands. Lucifer can only guess. If Jesus didn't know the day or the hour, Satan doesn't know it either. But they honestly thought they were going to pull it off, and I think they're still in gear. The folks that were propounding it then are still out there, still major players. In fact, it's pretty much the same players that I started looking at, many of whom I've met and talked to personally over the years. But Marilyn Ferguson, the author of The Aquarian Conspiracy, this year has come out with a book called Aquarius Now, with the Eye of Horus and on the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the scripture said this would not happen until the gospel had gone around the entire earth. And You know, again, I don't know if it's the real thing. I don't know if it's a wannabe. But I think I've seen it as a continuum because I've watched it continuously from that time on, and it hasn't gone away, and I've seen people increase in power and strength and consolidate. But I think maybe it is happening.
Mm-hmm. There's a question come in on the Fast Blast on the edgeam.com website. It says, is there any religion that has not at one point conquered their own followers to force them to believe their way?
I said human nature is human nature, and I'm greed and lust has probably overtaken all of us at one time or another. But I have to, and the more I've looked at this, the more I've been convinced that the truth was contained in the Judeo-Christian version of the scriptures. And and one of the things they said that all come short of the all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The other thing is that there shall not be found among you. And there was a list in Deuteronomy of forbidden spiritual practices. And why were they forbidden? Was God some kind of a cosmic killjoy who didn't want us to have a good time, or was it possibly that our Creator knew our limits, knew what we were capable of discerning and not discerning? And that these various rules and prohibitions against various forms of sorcery and hypnosis and divination were put in place to protect us basically from ourselves and from influences that were not of God, and that maybe when we cross that line, in a sense, we've crossed the same line that Adam and Eve crossed when they took the forbidden fruit. Mm-hmm. And, okay. Yeah, probably been... I don't know.
Constance, in
probably
your...
Probably elements of coercion with everybody.
Okay. Even on the other side, the non-believers probably have their own coercion. You know, it seems to me somebody was asking the question, I heard this kind of exchange that took place of, who has killed more people? Was it, you know, which religion had killed more people? And the answer was neither. It was the communist, which was a political system. So it seems like Pol Pot and Stalin and Lenin and probably somebody with a Chinese name did a whole lot more killing than all.
No, that's like that. You know, when you look at the pagans, you look at the Christians, the track record, there's been violence on all sides. But, you know, when you look at the Christians being sent to the lions and the crucifixes and things like that, Christianity doesn't always look so bad by comparison.
Well, I mean, even your UFO people got some killing involved, you know, abductions and whatnot.
Oh, yes, I remember that cult, yes.
So there's killing on all, whether New Age or alien or Bigfoot hunters. I guess you can get ate by a Bigfoot or a Yeti or something. Constance, is there any sinfully good time that a Christian can have without worrying about going to hell?
Pardon?
Is there any sinfully good time that a Christian can have without them worrying about going to hell?
Well, I think when we have I think if it's sinful, I really think that the safest thing is to do. I've decided that there's only one safe prayer for me these days, and that's to get up every day, because I'm human like all the rest of us, and I have my temptations too, The least stressful way to pray is to pray that God will make His will your will and make what He wants for you what you want for you. Mm-hmm. And just ask us to control our desires, because I think that we're taking chances that are very, very risky if we do step out of His will, and that's a presumption.
Have your temptations, would your sort of temptation would be to tell the New Agers where to go? I mean, would you just like to go off?
Every once in a while, that could be
Constance,
a temptation.
I'm
biggest
shocked.
Temptation is I love gadgets.
I'm shocked. I can't believe you. You just admitted that on the Edge Radio broadcast.
Yeah, how about that?
Okay. Well, we've got a lot more questions coming up in here. By the way, I was struggling with the name earlier, and I've got it here due to the program director handed it to me. We had a guest on by the name of Father Andrew Wingate, who said that the Antichrist appeared to him in his office and offered him a job, basically to work for the other side. Have you ever been offered a job?
No, I can't say as I have, and I'd be kind of skeptical of the good priest claims.
Well, I guess we want to go back then a little bit to this, the idea of the existence of Lucifer. Is he a ghost? Is he a person? Is he a, what is he?
I think this whole notion that the angels were all disembodied spirits is a Gnostic one that probably designed to defeat certain characteristics. This notion that all spirit is good and all matter is evil is a Gnostic notion that is part of the occult. God created the earth, God created man, God created the animals. He saw that it was good. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Lucifer is a ghost. I think that he's a very real presence out there who didn't have a break with God, mm-hmm. and is determined to take as many of us with him. Misery loves company. I suppose even with former angels, especially angels that were high keepers, and that basically the goal, his goal was always scripturally to be worshipped as God, mm-hmm. and he's never given up on that goal, and the more folks that he has that play into this, the happier he is, and I suspect that he probably has more respect for somebody like me than he would with somebody who would slavishly worship him.
Mm-hmm. This is not a question. It's more or less a statement to you. And it says, Constance, the rise to power of Xavier is amazing. He could be a hire of the Trilateral Commission. Of course, that's probably from a book, The Brotherhood of Darkness by Stanley Monteith. And they want to thank you for your good work in exposing the hidden dangers of the rainbow.
Well, I thank them for the compliment.
All right. And here's a question for you. How do you explain the Jewish Kabbalah? Is this pure evil?
Again, there were spiritual lines that weren't to be crossed and practices that were not to be pursued. And almost all of this has been a mixing. And I think that the Kabbalah was basically Jews mixing with pagan cultures and adopting it. Mm-hmm. And just as we've... almost every form of Christianity has had some form of apostasy at one time or another mixed into it and mixing and compromising, mm-hmm. and adopting it and trying to reconcile and blend it. And mm-hmm. I basically think the safest thing to do is to stay away from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about apostasy on the other side, the New Age movement. Would the apostate New Ager, would he have a Bible in his car?
I don't know if you could have an apostate New Ager. I think really God gave us that word. Buckminster Fuller, who was a New Ager, said the problem with Spaceship Earth was it didn't come equipped with an operator's manual. And I think that the Bible is a very good operator's manual. But I think the problem sometimes with there are New Age Bible interpretations and reading things at multiple levels of meaning. And I really, as a lawyer, I was trained to read things at their plain and obvious level of meaning. Mm-hmm. And I would maybe that might be an apostate from a New Ager's perspective, but I think it might be a healthy form of apostasy.
Okay. Well, you know, you single-handedly ruined my innocent view of the Wizard of Oz. What about Harry Potter? Is that New Age?
Oh my goodness, yes. And I think that that's been one of the more disturbing things to me. I think that J.J. Rowling has really given a whole generation of innocent children a thorough initiation experience. I think it is plunging children into things that they just do not understand, and they may become better readers in the process, but I hope they'll get exposed to the hidden dangers of the rainbow that they're being exposed to.
Mm-hmm. What about this controversy about the SquarePants SpongeBob?
That's beyond me. I'm not an expert on SpongeBob. Never seen it.
Oh, really?
I'm culturally deprived.
Well,
I've heard a little talk about it, but I've
evidently there's a controversy because evidently James Dobson was probably misquoted, I imagine, but he was somehow equated the SpongeBob. What sponge creature, whatever he is, to maybe being a gay character, and so sort of that programming is sort of opening the minds of children. Anybody who's square and
couldn't comment on that.
I mean, well, he has pulled down his pants a number of times on the show.
Oh,
okay.
Uh-oh.
So I'm not, you know, I mean, it's pretty embarrassing really watch that, to see a sea sponge do that. That's something you don't want to see. When we're talking about the revelation of this Maitreya, this Antichrist, this pure evil character, what is the time frame for that to happen?
Well, it may be happening now. If it just may be happening now with I don't know for certain, but when I started watching, they really thought they were going to pull it off in 1982, in the spring of 1982, and we really thought there was no way to stop it. And they were really dumbfounded when opposition developed. And to this day, many times when they write about the opposition, I'm the only one that gets mentioned. But I really think things may be coming to a head now. The Maurice Strong, who is the mentor and backer of Kofi Annan at the United Nations, very strong proponent of that. I pulled down Lucis Trust pages on the reappearance of the Christ recently on the web and saw a group picture of all of them standing together at the Findhorn Foundation in Scotland. And David Spangler, the one who said we had to take the Luciferic initiation, was the co-director of that. And unmistakably, standing in the center of the group, there was Maurice Strong. And there is a certain determination now to pull this off, and I think that this alliance of civilizations and this cartoon crisis, I don't know if it's opportunistic or if it was planned. There is a New Age slogan, crisis equals opportunity. But now they're talking about that there has to be worldwide legislation and rules implemented to forbid criticism of religion and religious mm-hmm. symbols. And to a point, I'm not for insensitivity on mm-hmm. on anybody's part and handling people telling people that you're not allowed to criticize.
Yeah.
It's very easy to see that very instrument that they say is going to protect it could be turned into a repressive instrument very, very soon. There is mm-hmm. a scriptural prophecy that the devil went to make war with those who kept the faith of Jesus and the commandments of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly looks like a lot of that talk is shaping up, and it could be very soon.
You know, this, I guess we got to keep talking about movies. Seems to me I was bombarded here a couple months ago. I was being warned of the movie Chicken Little as if some sort of New Age message in there.
Chicken Little was The Sky is Falling. I don't know. That was a story when I had my first grade reader, and I don't want to say how long ago that was.
I didn't get it either, but evidently there's something bad about that. Hey,
I don't know.
Okay. We got this question. The Church of Scientology and the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, are they part and parcel of the New Age? Have they been sold out to the New Age, or are they
both
separate?
Both are New Age right from the core, the Krishna the Krishna consciousness that's a version of Hinduism, and it's a big branch of the New Age in the United States. Scientology was L. Ronald Hubbard, and I'm in possession of an old New Age book from England, The Aquarian Path. It was a 1952 English networking magazine, and it wrote fondly about a new guy that was coming on the scene, L. Ronald Hubbard, and his books on Dianetics, and they said, isn't it wonderful? L. Ronald Hubbard has taken our New Age concepts and put it into a language more easily understandable mm-hmm. by the masses. Earhart Seminar's training has built on concepts of Scientology. He combined them with psycho-cybernetics and Swami Muktananda mm-hmm. and blended the three, but Scientology is a big part of the New Age.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question. Constance, do you celebrate Easter and Christmas?
Yes, I do. And
you know where we're heading?
I know there are people that try to say that that's pagan. And I point out that the New Agers talking in their books saying they were going to get rid of these holidays, that Easter might be maintained with some type of a pagan significance, but Good Friday would have to go and Christmas would have to go. And when people say, well, we're not going to celebrate Christmas because we think it's pagan, I remind them that's one time of year when it is almost virtually impossible to forget that Jesus Christ existed. And you get rid of that, you've basically eliminated the time that anybody might think about it, consider it, because I think that what Jesus Christ, he's the true bridge that God sent to reconcile us to him. And it's not an Antankarana rainbow bridge between the earth's personality and the oversoul, but the bridge back to God with Jesus Christ. And I think eliminating Easter and Christmas is a good way to forget about that.
Well, I tell you what, in my years of being on this planet, I haven't seen a whole lot of Jesus activity, I suppose one would say, around or on the Christmas day. Certainly in my previous family get-togethers, that's the last name that is mentioned, so I don't know if what you say is completely true there.
Well, the Catholics do a pretty good job of maintaining Jesus at Christmas, and a lot mm-hmm. of the fundamentalist denominations mm-hmm. do as well. And there's a whole lot of commercialization. Yeah.
Now, Catholics in
general. And the one that irritates me the most is Thanksgiving, when folks call it Turkey Day.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey Day is for turkeys. Let's remember God.
Yeah.
You know, be thankful for what he gave us.
Yeah, now do you eat pork as well?
Pardon?
Do you eat pork?
Pork is not a staple on my diet. If I have some pepperoni or something like that, it doesn't bother me. But my mother was a Seventh-day Adventist, and they didn't. They took quite literally the biblical portions against pork. Although, as I came to read the New Testament and other passages of it, I don't know if it's a law for everybody. It certainly was a Jewish dietary law, but since that was part of my early upbringing, I must confess I'm not a heavy pork eater.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the book of the... let me get this back up. I've got the number of questions here. Stand by. The book Revelation, do you believe that is esoteric wording for the New World Order's plan?
No, I don't think that the book of Revelation is esoteric wording for the New World Order's plan, although there are New Age... versions, hijackings of the book of Revelation and turning it inside out. Barbara Marx Hubbard, for example, she wrote the book of Revelation, the book of co-creation, and basically she reversed the meanings of it. And there were some very strict warnings scripturally about not doing that. It said if anybody added to it, their part would be added to the plagues. If anybody took away from it, their part would be taken away from the tree of life and participation in God's eternal kingdom. And I take those warnings very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an attempted hijacking of those meanings, and I think that's something we always have to prayerfully mm-hmm. avoid.
Mm-hmm. Do you, in any of your writings, do you reject the notion of a resurrection?
No. Not at all. No. No, there are definitely is a resurrection. That's what Jesus Christ being the first, and there definitely, it's prophesied there will be a resurrection, and in the scriptures, Paul had stern warnings against those who said that the resurrection had already occurred and that they overthrew the faith of many.
Mm-hmm. As it was with most of our professing type of Christians, from our hour and a half here of talking, I kind of put you there. If you haven't said to you openly, I've kind of put you there. But do you subscribe to a pre, post, or mid-tribulation situation?
I root for the pre-tribbers, but I think that the reality is probably the mid-tribbers. The book of Revelation, as I read it, showed the seals opening, the first six seals of Revelation, the rider on the white horse, the Antichrist, the interpretation is coming forth, conquering and to conquer. The rider on the red horse fighting and killing, breaking out over the globe. We've certainly seen plenty of that. The rider on the black horse, the increase the inflation for some and shortages among luxuries for others, touch not the oil and the wine. I think we've probably seen that too.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth seal, the rider on the pale horse. And it's possible that what we've seen in the last couple few years, the tsunamis, the Katrina, the plagues that are coming and the continued fighting and killing. And the fifth seal was the persecution mm-hmm. of the church.
Okay, seals
under the voices under the altars crying out, "How long, Lord, how long?" And they were given light ropes and told to rest a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an interruption. There was an earthquake, was the great sixth seal. And then the redeemed were shown standing in heaven between the sixth and the seventh seal. And then there were warnings to touch not the earth. Until God has sealed his servants in the forehead. And then the interpretation of that, I can't be totally certain of. And then the seventh seal was when the seven last plagues hit the earth. And that was basically, scripturally it appeared to be punishment on the beast and his believers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Antichrist, whoever he was. And, existence struggles and punishments on the earth, and then God comes back and cleans everything up and for a period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I see it. That seems to me a logical reading, but I can advance arguments for, you could argue pre-trib, but I think the pre-trib and post-millennialism are two sides of the exact same coin.
Okay.
Under the first scenario, the believers go directly to glory land. They never have a tough day. After all, mm-hmm. God wouldn't want a bruised and battered
yeah.
bride.
And what happens to
under
the New Agers?
Under the second scenario, they increase in power and glory until they own all the microwaves
okay.
and personal computers. Bad day either.
Okay, Constance.
And neither side is prepared in the least for some very okay. plain prophecies of persecution of believers.
Okay.
And I think that they are in for a very rough time, psychologically at least. I think that probably the mid-trib position is probably the accurate one.
Okay.
The warning that Paul gave, he said, as regards the coming of our Lord and gathering together unto him, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except the falling away come first and the man of perdition be revealed. Revealed referred to two very specific events, the falling away from the faith, the apostasy, and the revelation of the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
And that those things precede the rapture, and I think those people who think that we're in heaven 3.5 years before the Antichrist is even revealed are really set up for supreme deception.
Okay. When this, and this, I got a few more questions, so as short as your answers can be great. What's going to happen to the New Agers when these believers are taken out?
Well, I think that people are going to be given fair warning, but I think that a day is going to come when God is going to say, let he who is righteous be righteous still, let he who is filthy be filthy still. And that the time that we can make our choice is ended, and I want to be on the right side of this when this happens. And
mm-hmm.
you know,
okay, good.
And when the choice becomes clear that this is a contest between God and Lucifer, I think if people knowingly choose Lucifer, they're going to be in some trouble.
Okay, is the city of New York the Babylon mentioned in Revelations?
I doubt if New York is the Babylon mentioned in Revelation, but it has occurred to me many times that America itself could be the Babylon mentioned in Revelation.
Okay. Do you believe God judged New Orleans?
There were in last days there were going to come things like this, but I don't think it was per se a judgment of God, but I do think that these things happening at the end of time, the tsunamis, the increase in weather, the seals opening where there would be death and destruction, were going to come, that these were prophesied events, but that it was punishment on the people of New Orleans who are very godly, many of them who are very godly people. There was a lot of sin and loosely living in New Orleans, but there were a lot of very, very godly people who were horribly, horribly affected by this. And I really think that a lot of the judgment is going to come like on people who basically didn't help, like the people when there was the Good Samaritan who went by and he saw the man who had been beaten and took him in when all the people who thought they were righteous passed by, one of Jesus' parables. And then the Good Samaritan took him in and fed him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's going to be a lot of delineation because Matthew 25 is the warning. It said that, he would divide the sheep from the goats, and I was hungry and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. I was a stranger and you took me in, and as much as you've done unto the least of these, my brethren.
Okay. Right.
And then that those who didn't, and I really think that if we basically ignored people in that and said, oh, well, they got God's judgment, we could be on the wrong side of the judgment line.
Whoa. Okay. Have you seen in your travels of signs and wonders?
I've had too much happen to me personally to ever be an atheist.
Okay. In your travels, have you seen signs and wonders?
Have I seen signs and wonders?
Yeah.
I've had some things personally that have happened to me that I couldn't ignore that I've been looking back. I think usually we see God looking back. There's been one or two times that I in my career that I thought I saw something when it was mm-hmm. happening, but signs and wonders, it's probably a sign and a wonder that we're all here in this age to witness what we're witnessing.
Some believe that miracles ceased in the early church. Do you subscribe to that way of thinking?
No, and I think God can speak to people anytime, anywhere He wants to.
If you've seen signs and wonders, how do you know that you're not seeing the lying signs and wonders? What's the difference?
Well, you have to test it. Everything has to be tested. You have to test it. You have to really test the spirits, prove the spirits, everyone, to make sure they're of God. And it's not usually, one way you test it, if you see something and then that spirit tells you to, you know, let's go follow other gods, then you know that either the God's proving you or it's a lying sign and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I have, I'd probably have to talk to you privately and just tell you I've had too much happen to me personally to ever be an atheist. I couldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be tested. People say that no man has at any time seen God. Moses came as close to it as anybody did, and God had to put him in the cleft of the rock and cover him with a hand, and at that, the reflected glory was too much. Now, if you haven't seen the sunlight, a flashlight would look pretty darn impressive, and when people cross the line and dabble in New Age practices, very often they report signs and wonders, and not of the type that I would ever tell you about. Nothing, everything always seems very, very ordinary when it happens. It's just looking back that you think God must have been there. But they dabble in this, and all at once they have something of overwhelming power that comes upon them. They just know that they know that they know that this thing is God. Well, if you depart from that thing thinking you're God yourself, and this lying voice tells you you're God yourself, you can probably know that that's a ground to reject it. You really have to test the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like my grandmother used to say, we're not judges, but we are fruit inspectors.
Okay, if a New Ager has seen these signs and wonders, and they get this idea from voices from out there or wherever they get them from, of that they are God and they are one and they are all, they are the rainbow, whatever, how can they approach your God, and do they ask Him to say, look, I've seen, do they have a conversation with Him and say, we've seen the wonders over here, what can you do? Is that a legitimate request from God?
I think here's what you do with God. You get down on your knees and you ask God, please show me what's of you and what isn't. He will answer that prayer speedily.
So if a person has been stuck in New Age their whole life and that's all they know, they can still do that?
You just have to approach God humbly. That's
okay.
All.
All right, Constance, in the last minute, whatever you'd like to say. You haven't mentioned your website. I know you have a blog.
I have a blog spot. It's worldwideweb.cumby.blogspot.com. And basically, this is all I have to say. All 10 virgins were sleeping, a biblical parable.
Mm-hmm.
All 10 virgins woke up. 5 had enough oil in their lamp to go meet their Lord. 5 didn't. Maybe it's time all of us, every one of us, whether we perceive ourselves as Christian or New Ager, went oil shopping and just asked God very humbly to show us what the truth is.
Okay. All right, Constance, thank you for coming on the show. Can we have you back on
again?
Thank
you for the opportunity, Daniel. You're doing a fine job.
All right.